Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, you guys. Welcome to Steel Wars. I'm comedian Steel Saunders, and I do love Star Wars. Welcome back to our Star Wars celebration coverage. We are day three. It is Saturday, Rebels Day, and I present to you guys in full and recorded from the actual mixing desk. It is the Rebels Q&A with Dave Filoni and cast. Now, if you are new to the Steel Wars podcast, maybe you just found this because you were searching for Rebels, check out other blog pod entries for Star Wars Celebration. There is tons of great conversations giving you a ground level look at what it's like to be at Celebration, and includes interviews with the likes of Daisy Ridley, John Boyega, Kathleen Kennedy, Ryan Johnson, and some of your favorite members of the Star Wars fan media community. Plus, there's a story about going to high school with Jake Lloyd, and a story about getting your sand signed by Hayden Christensen. So check that all out after you listen to this really fun press conference.
Hi, you guys. Welcome to the Star Wars Rebels Season 4 press conference. Thank you for your patience. I know we're a couple minutes late, but we hope everyone just came from the pretty awesome panel. And we have most of our panelists here to take some of your questions. So let's bring out Dave Filoni, Tia Sarkar, Steve Bloom, Vanessa Marshall, and Taylor Gray.
I get this shit.
Yeah.
Taylor. That's all you get.
And so you guys, we'll do this old-fashioned style. I'll just call on you when you raise your hand, and we'll try to be as fair as we can, okay? So who wants to go first? Go.
So Dave, I noticed during the panel you changed the question mark on your shirt to an exclamation. And I was curious, what was the meaning behind that little slip?
But it's not changed. It's just a question mark. I think that was something inside you that you saw. I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, I think you're right. Because it looks, that's a question mark. I mean, the printer maybe screwed up. It looks
you
like,
were willing
thank you, though.
So.
The emotions take over.
Interesting question. I didn't see that. Yeah.
Tia?
Yeah, sorry, I thought I was being called on to ask a question. I was like, I don't have a question. Yes, yeah. My brain is also turning to mine.
Tia, can you talk about what was going on when Dave announced the end of, that it was ended at season four?
Could you tell that I was a little emotional? I knew it was coming. Well, we've known for a little while, if I can say that, and we weren't sure when you guys would find out. And so recently we saw each other and I asked Dave and he said, we're gonna tell them in person at Celebration. And I thought, at first I thought, oh, you cruel, cruel man, you're gonna like break their hearts like in real life just right there. And then I thought about it later and I thought, what a nice way to get to share that news with you in person rather than like putting out a press release and having people find out online and in this impersonal way. I thought we all get to be there to tell you together. And of course, I feel like heartbroken that it's ending, but also, Dave told us something similar that what he told you guys, which is that we've told the story we wanted to tell and we've gotten to end it on our own terms in a way that, you know, we all feel really good about. And so I was just feeling a lot of feelings, and I was happy to get to be there when we told everybody.
Dave is so mysterious, we're never sure if what he tells us is true.
That's
anyway.
That's true.
Okay. Hi. Over here. Well, on that same token, I'm assuming vocals have probably been recorded for that final episode already. And how did that feel? Obviously not getting into spoiler territory, but for all of you, how was that process?
What can we say, Dave?
Not much. I wouldn't say much. I mean, I think that to take the pressure off you guys, the plan of the show and everything, and it's just what Star Wars should be, in my opinion, and what I've experienced is there will be episodes like we screened today that have somewhat of a somber ending, but you have to go through those things with the characters and as the characters to get to some type of conclusion of perhaps joy and feeling of victory. You know, what is your victory without knowing the consequences on some level of what defeat could be? So it's part of the narrative that we have these ups and downs, and but I think always Star Wars represents, you know, a happy thing, a thing that exhilarates people, a thing that gives you hope, a thing that makes you feel like you can attack the day better, a thing that inspires you, inspires kids. That's always been the goal that Simon and I had with this show, is to inspire all of you guys, and especially the kids in the audience. So I'm working towards, you know, that end. It doesn't mean there won't be probably tragic things and difficult things along the way, but that's the journey of the hero and the journey of us all. So, you know, I think it'll be a good season.
Hey, Dave, Christian Horler from Collider Jedi Council. Last season you were asked, you had a definitive answer when you asked about Vader. Mm-hmm. And you said, well, we want to scale back on Vader because of, you know, we don't want to use him too much. We got Thrawn. Do you have a definitive answer this season about, are we getting more Vader or Emperor, perhaps?
Not as definitive, no.
Okay.
Not as definitive, which is probably a good thing. You get more Thrawn. So I like Thrawn. Let's go with that.
Okay. Hey, guys. Lucas here.
Over here.
Hi.
Hey. Good to see you all.
Okay.
Taylor, I got to ask you, I feel like we haven't gotten to hear much of your perspective of Ezra's crazy amount of growth in season 3, because he really started in such a bad place at the start of season 3, and then by the end, even knowing that the Lothal thing didn't quite work out, he seemed so much more at peace and so much more resolved. Tell me a little bit about where he is going into season 4, having experienced all of that.
I think he matured the most through season 3 out of all the seasons thus far. Season 2 was really him toying with the dark side and seeing what possibilities lie there. But season 3, there were also, I mean, the whole Mandalorian thing, and there was a selflessness that he's now learned, and I think that contributes to that peace that you're talking about. And as I had said at the panel that we had done, or big whatever, that was awesome. I don't know what to call it, but see, it's geared him up for season 4. He's kind of in a place where he has to make a decision as to who he wants to be. But season 3 was a lot of realizing what his role was and seeing that sometimes he's going to have to step up and burden all the responsibility that need be, and other times he's going to sit back and Sabine will take over. And I think he's grown up a lot and matured, and that's been the fun part of playing this character, because if you look at the very first episode, he's come so far. And he's changed a lot, and it's been super cool. So season 4 is interesting because a lot of decisions are made for Ezra.
Hi, Chris from the Star Wars Underworld. I feel like with previous animated projects like the Clone Wars, you guys had a lot of space to grow the show and the characters and mature over five and a half seasons. And I was wondering, with Star Wars Rebels on XD, how do you balance growing the show and growing the characters and becoming more mature with also leaving it as a good entry point for all age demographics?
It's tough, but it's Star Wars, and I think when Star Wars is successful, it's always hitting all demographics. I mean, it's been something since the very beginning that I think shocked people, because you could go watch Star Wars at the theater in 77, and whether you liked fantasy or sci-fi or not, you enjoyed it. And part of that is the humor that Harrison brings to it, you know, and the intensity that Carrie Fisher portrays, and the kind of Luke Skywalker that's in everybody. And that just resonates with people. It could have been anything in Star Wars. My father really liked it because of the music, and he was a big opera person, opera lover and symphony lover, and we related over that. It's connected at its core to the concept of family and watching it together as a family and experiencing the dynamics of the characters as family. So even though now we're in the fourth season, if you check it out, my hope is that you're engaged by the dynamics of these characters, that they make you laugh, that you worry for them. And if you haven't seen the previous seasons, you go, oh my gosh, I better go catch up on those, you know, and see what's going on. But you'll still hopefully enjoy it. You know, I mean, if you watch Return of the Jedi and that's your entry point and you wonder what these little bears about and everything else, you know, you probably go back and watch, you know, A New Hope. Now, that was tougher back then because you couldn't really do that unless you had a Super 8 and you only got a cut down version of it. But, you know, now there are ways. I always marvel at how the things these characters talk about, you can literally drop in a DVD, and now if you saw today's episode, they're talking about Satine on Mandalore, Bo-Katan's sister. Well, you can go watch that. I did it. It's there. So we live in a strange time for continuity because it's all available, and that also kind of changes the dynamic of the storyteller as well.
Over here, Mike with Weeby Geeks and Wookiee Radio.
I'm right here.
Vanessa, we've seen in season one, season two, some tension, some relationship between Hera and Kanan. It develops a lot more and becomes a little more open season three. Has that been a relief? And how much more do we get with that going into season four?
I wouldn't call it a relief, per se. Yeah, it's obvious that they've had a connection, and that is explored further. And I think I probably should just leave it there. but I think many fans who have been rooting for the space married,
oh yeah,
will find it very moving. Yeah, what is he doing?
I'm rooting for it.
Okay, very good. Anyway, thanks for the question.
Hi. Who's next? Okay. Hi, I'm Sarah Woloski from Skywalking Through Neverland and
Yay.
Fangirls Going Rogue.
Yay.
And I have a question. I know our listeners love to hear about the Force, like the Mortis arc and Clone Wars and stuff. Mm. And so my question is, are we going to explore the Force in that way and mythology a little bit more in season four? And especially regarding that white wolf we saw in the trailer, as well as the fate of Ahsoka.
There's a wolf in the trailer.
There were a bunch of
Where was the wolf at?
That'd be such a direct daggered question. Like, yes, I know now. I see all the spots. See, I know all of you better now over the years. You're all a very perceptive group, and I enjoy this very much. you make the dance very difficult for me because I so desperately want to answer your questions as a fan to fan, and I appreciate it. The Force is the core of Star Wars, and you have to be careful when you answer too many questions about it. Belief in the Force itself is part of what drives it. Not everybody in the Star Wars universe believes in it, which is interesting because its actions and abilities are on display quite often. So you think, well, why doesn't everybody believe in it? What's so hard about Han Solo that he doesn't believe in the Force when the Jedi Knights weren't so long ago, as we find out in the prequels? Because it takes discipline and training and practice and commitment and faith to believe in this thing, that it gives you power, that it flows through you. It's in all of you. You all have it. Just some people, like Anakin, are more gifted. And that's great, and it's also dangerous. And I think that what we'll explore in season four, as we get to the depth of Kanan's commitment and Ezra's commitment to the Force, is that ultimate choice. Do you become more dangerous and fall to wickedness, or do you, in the face of fear, turn to good? Fear is the root of all evil. Fear destroys everything. Fear makes you make decisions you would not make. Fear makes you think you're making good decisions and they're poor decisions because you're afraid. And if you take nothing else away from Star Wars, you should make no decision out of fear. And when the Emperor stands before you and has destroyed your father and ruined your life and you're powerless and he's made you hate your father almost and you throw him down, you must remember at that critical point to say, I'm going to throw my weapon away because I love the person next to me. I love my father. I love my mother. And nothing you do can destroy that. Nothing. And you stand on your commitment. And then that inspires in Anakin the hope. That inspires the love, which something evil does not understand. That's the core of Star Wars. And that is the power that you can't possibly imagine when you're evil that Obi-Wan speaks of. So maybe we'll get into that. I don't know.
Well done.
Wow. Okay. Thomas Riddle, Star Wars in the Classroom. And I'm supposed to follow a question from
that's
that.
Fine. We can talk about, you know, question marks or...
Yeah, we've already tried that. It didn't work, right? Right? No. So I appreciate what you guys do. Hey, Vanessa, what you said earlier about inspiring kids, inspiring us all, right? Mm-hmm. And I would just like to ask each of you, what characteristics of your characters do you hope will serve as inspiration to kids or all of us?
Mm. For me, one of my favorite lines that Hera says is, "We have hope." And there's something about that I think we all need right now. I know I do. And I draw on Hera's strength in that capacity and her faith in the face of just impossible odds. She's always hopeful. And I hope that kids carry some of that with them when they face their challenges. Yeah.
And for me, I would say that Zeb, with all his muscles, has to find a place of vulnerability and trust after seemingly losing everything and coming into the series with nothing left to lose and then building relationships with his family. Now he's got everything to lose. And I think I hope that kids walk away from this knowing that it's okay to be vulnerable and okay to trust and okay to have hope and okay to see that there's something bigger than yourself, even in your darkest moments.
It's hard to follow up after either both of those.
You're Mandalorian.
Answers.
I can help you with hand cards.
It's all good.
Well, I was just thinking, as you guys were talking, I don't know, it's a little different now that we have seen Sabine interact with her family, her biological family again, which we never had before, but for seasons 1, 2 and some of 3, you know, I often thought, like, I didn't know where her family was and what the situation was. I knew that maybe eventually we would get there, but I just thought, how nice. There are a lot of people out there whose families, maybe their family situations aren't ideal for whatever reasons. Maybe they've been cast out of their families for whatever reasons, and just that you can find that family bond elsewhere. It doesn't have to be if your situation is not ideal. There's hope for you still. That, you know, this girl who was sort of on her own and bounty hunting or doing all kinds of, you know, lecherous behavior, I guess. I don't know.
Graffiti art.
Yeah, or graffiti art. I don't know what she... We don't all know everything she was up to. Found this, like, safe space with these people who are not her blood relatives, but through their shared, you know, struggle and, you know, this shared cause, that they became a family, like the tightest family, you know, the strongest bond a family could have. So, you know, just that there is hope out there for people that may be in similar situations. You might not be bounty hunting, but that you might be able to find that somewhere, even if it's not the people that you thought you would have that with.
Yeah, I would say with Ezra, it depends where you break it down, but I'd say his strength, really. I wish I was as strong as Ezra was when I was a kid. I feel like that's something that enables you, if you have that strength and believe in yourself the way Ezra does, you can accomplish things that otherwise seem impossible. And with the youth, empowering them, I think, is very important. And so I would say his strength. Also, to piggyback what Steve had said, the willingness to trust. And, I mean, there are so many things, his independence, but I narrow it down to Ezra.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Strength, I think that's very important for kids.
Brian Young, Full of Sith. Freddie in the panel talked about how sort of the defining moment for his character was in Trials of the Darksaber, and that sort of defined his character. And as we look back at season three, and I'm wondering if you all could kind of tell us what it was you feel defined your characters as they changed through season three. What was that moment for you as an actor or for your characters?
That's tough.
I know.
Well, mine is easy because it's the same, so I'll just go ahead. Trials of the Darksaber, I think, you know, for Sabine is like a turning point. And up until that point, we had never, or she had never allowed herself to be in this vulnerable place, and certainly never allowed people that she let into her life and into her world see her in that sort of state. And so, being faced with these new challenges, you know, before it was just like, let's fight the Empire. Let's mess up the Empire. What do we have to do? Let's do it. And let me do it in my artful, amazing way. But, I had sort of Sabine had a laser focus on that. But she was also obviously hiding such pain, and fragility so deep inside that she would have never allowed herself to like display, even in front of the people closest to her in her life. And so that moment, I think, is such a turning point. And it also, you know, it's a moment where she either has to be defensive and be sort of the way she's being initially with, you know, with Ezra, and trying not to allow herself to really, really dig deep and go to where she knows she needs to go. And it's like this moment, this like sort of pivotal moment where she grows up in that moment, and she knows what she has to do, and she takes control, and she faces her biggest fears, and she's willing to do it for the greater good and for the good of her families, both of her families. So, Trials of the Darksaber was a moment for me and for Sabine, I think.
I'll add to that just because I think it was a beautiful moment when Hera tells Kanan, you know, that you need to trust Sabine and this isn't about you. For me, the actress, that moment meant a lot to me because it showed me just how close she is to Kanan, because it's those who love you the most that can tell you what you don't want to hear. And I think she was very supportive of his relationship with Ezra, and perhaps instrumental, but I think he needed someone to say, for him to, you know, release, you know, what he needed to release in terms of trusting that he is a good teacher and so on and so forth, as he did with Ezra. Hearing that it wasn't about him, I think, was key. And for me, I understood Hera and her relationship with Kanan the most in that moment. And it meant a lot to me that she loved him enough to tell him that.
Yeah, my big turning point happened in the previous season in a couple of ways, I think. For all the jokes we've made about Hot Callus, that was a very profound time in the arc of my character, just because I felt like Callus was a mirror for him. He got to look into the darkest places of himself that he hadn't previously been able to, and saw it in the face of his enemy, and had to really deal with that. And I reacted to that very personally, because I did that at 40 years old in my personal life, and to see that play out in a cartoon was a very profound moment for me. So, thanks, Dave, for helping me heal.
No problem, Steve. I'm here, buddy.
I'd say there were a handful of defining moments. I can think of one in season four, but I can't say that. I can. I don't know what would happen if I did.
You'll never work again, though, kid.
But I would go, I would take it a different way and say, I think watching through season three how Sabine dealt with her family, it served almost as a role model for Ezra in seeing how she went back and took care of what she needed to take care of and her people and stood up for what she believed in and did what was right in that sense. And being able to see that somewhat removed, also aiding in that whole process, I think Ezra realized what his calling was and is, and that he needs to go back to the place he's from and help out his people of Lothal. And I would say watching Sabine's trajectory through season three helped define part of who Ezra is and is becoming as well.
Hi guys, Gary O'Toole from the Irish Star Wars podcast, Blab of the Hoo. Dave, can you talk a little bit about the mindset of Thrawn going into this? Obviously, as somebody who values logic, tactical awareness, he's come up against something that he just cannot comprehend in the sheer power of the Bendu. So has that had a profound effect on him in any way? And will we see a changed Thrawn and adapted Thrawn almost?
Thrawn in season four is operating from a position of victory. He, in his mind, is really set back, and he's correct, the rebel fleet with a pretty crushing blow. He's also tempered their aggressive tendency, which you see the after effects of all the way into Rogue One, where they're incredibly hesitant to actually fight on a bigger scale. It takes a lot to draw them out because they lost so big. So I think it's interesting to see the effects of Thrawn, which is what you want. You want him to be a very important character and to be a villain that's affecting everything. So he's operating from a position of having total control of Lothal now. And the rebels, in some ways, are being deconstructed. They are trying to amass all of these ships. They're trying to amass all these starfighters. And one has to start to wonder what's going to be the point of that. Are they ever going to have as much even hardware as Thrawn to fight with, and let alone his tactical genius? The Bendu represents the Thrawn, you know, somewhat of an enigma. He doesn't really understand it. I think he would admit as much. He doesn't really have secrets like that. But he's trying to understand it, and I think it's what drives his study of art. You know, he's like someone that so badly wants to understand this greater thing, and he can't for whatever reason. He delves into the art. He tactically understands it, but his, you know, whatever connects emotionally, passionately, perhaps what makes him a good tactician seems to not be there. So it'll be interesting to see where we go with that. But he is a very difficult villain to beat. It will seemingly take a lot to do it, which I think is very fun. He's the first kind of arch villain to survive a season. Vader came and went, you know, he's like, I'm out the door. And which is Vader, you know, Anakin. but Thrawn is still there. And he knows they're a threat, but boy, he really kicked their butt. So we'll see how that goes.
Hi, Wes Carroll with iHeartMedia over here.
Hey.
I assume that you guys don't normally watch each new episode with thousands of people all crowded around rabid fans.
Nope.
I may be incorrect.
Well, when we watch it on TV, sort of.
Right, and it's they're just not in the room, right?
Well, not on a big screen.
You are correct.
No.
Yeah.
But I'd love to hear you guys what that's like for you to be able to. I know as voice actors, sometimes you don't get any feedback at all, other than maybe from Dave or whoever you're working with in the immediate room. But what that's like to get that kind of feedback on that large scale with such very fierce fans.
It's the best.
Yeah, it's the best feeling ever.
The best part is that we have never each time this has happened at Celebration, we've never gotten to see anything up until the point at which you all are also seeing the same thing. So I think it's thrilling for me, for us. I'll go ahead and...
And it's cool because we're all making the same sounds. Like Bo-Katan, we all went, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I was screaming in the front row. I just assumed you were too.
Yeah, you hit my shoulder, I think.
Sorry,
with Bo-Katan. No, I loved it.
but that's really rewarding, and it makes me feel like we're family, which we are, so... Yeah.
It's so weird for me because I knew it was going to happen.
Right.
I saw pieces of it when I went up to see you. And yet I was I was still broken at the end of it. I went back to full on fan, full absorption mode, and I was bent and broken by it, and that's what I want to feel. I want to be that invested. So it was great to experience that with all of you guys. I felt, you know, like that's an opportunity for us to just let it all go, let everything that we know about the franchise go and just be immersed.
And also to get to watch it in that environment with the sound and the screen and all of you. And it reminds me what a cinematic experience Rebels really is. I mean, I know that when I'm watching it on my TV and sitting on my couch, but to get to see it in this capacity is like, you know, it's like a movie every time we watch, which is a testament to you and all, you know.
Yeah, bravo.
Kevin Kleiner and
absolutely.
The animators and the whole team.
It's but the it's coolest way to watch it.
Stunning, yeah. Easily. And you're like, how do we get so lucky to get to be a
no
part
idea.
Of it?
I'm glad I didn't have a bucket of popcorn because I would have just devoured the entire thing.
Or like thrown it in the air.
Yeah,
when you saw
yeah. Oh, man.
Well, what is it like for you, Dave, and watch? Because for us, like, we can remove ourselves and we're fans of it then, but you, I just wonder that.
I mean, sorry, Taylor, I've seen it so many times by that point. No.
No, I'm saying with everyone there.
It's the greatest thing. I mean, I can't even express it. You always wonder when you're writing this stuff, like, are people going to laugh at that moment? Is that too brutal when Chopper hits that guy in the head with a gun? Oh, no, they all laughed at that. Wow, that's kind of scary. And so I learn a lot about the audience. And I wish that I had more of that, honestly. Like, it really helps as a creative to hear what people react to. You know, anytime Kanan and Hera lean in towards each other at all, the reaction is in the room. I'm like, wow, that's kinetic. And so it's kind of fun because as an artist, you want to play with those things and play with those emotions. I mean, I felt bad that, you know, in production, the only episode that we could air here was the one I had, which is that one. Season 4 is, you know, underway and we're working hard on it, but I didn't have more of a positive ending. But, you know, narratively, Sabine did a terrible thing. And we've talked about since the first season this terrible thing that you did and why you're not with your family and how you're kind of ostracized from the rest of Mandalore. Well, you're going to see the terrible thing that you did. And so what's great about our fans is that I think they get that. And they get that where we take you to that place and we'll see how everybody deals with it from there, which is coming out the other side of the darkness. But it had to be a terrible thing you did. And you know, the best you could do there is shoot it nicely, so it's beautifully terrible. And Joel and the guys, Keith, they do a great job with the animation and lighting. So, you know, I can give them anything, and they can make it, even when tragic, look beautiful.
Hi, everyone. Jedi Tembark, I have here.
Hey.
Hi.
I know you've gotten a lot of questions about Ahsoka, so I wanted to ask about a different Clone Wars character. Captain Rex faces past a little bit last season. So I was wondering if you could talk about his mindset heading into season 4.
Yeah, good Rex. I love that guy. He's been around the block, and I've, you know, this is nothing to do with season 4, as I, you know, slyly evade you. But I've been amazed at how active so many bald cosplayers are playing him, and they just love it, and they get right into it. They shave their heads. Like, people seem to love that guy. He relates. Rex is, like, in a very real way, the common man. The common soldier. And I've had, you know, people that have served in the military come up and talk about what it's meant to them, his story and the other clones and the trauma that they've gone through, and it's very real and it's helped them. So, you know, I think for Rex, the idea for me since Clone Wars has always been that he is the good soldier. He is the one that's actually fighting, not for the, you know, any politics of a situation, but for the people he's actually trying to protect, and his intention is good, always good. You know, and honorable. He fights with honor. There's no waste there. There's no cruelty there. He is a good person and a proud warrior. So I think you see that starting to follow because he's part of this rebellion now. He's actually probably, for the first time, if you think about it, fighting for something he actually believes in, not something he's programmed to believe in. He believed in a republic. But that republic didn't exist. The republic, because of Palpatine, was a lie. And he was created through deception. But he's empowered himself, you know. And now he can become something greater because he's an individual making choices because he believes in something. And so I know Dee and I talk about this at length, you know. And he's in season 4, thankfully. And we'll see where he goes in that season.
Hey guys, Eric Goldman from IGN.
Yeah.
Hey.
Hello. Had to ask, Vanessa, a question for you, also somewhat for Dave. We've been wondering about where these characters would end up since the show began. Where are they during the original trilogy? Rogue One gave us an answer for Chopper and for Hera.
Yay.
So first of all, two-part question, which is, what did you think about the promotion about General Syndulla? And then for you and for Dave, see how much he will reveal. Should we assume that, you know, we'll might get to see that promotion before the end of the show? How much do you want to connect exactly to what we know about this one character?
I was elated. I couldn't feel my legs. I think my mind exploded, for the millionth time since being a part of this project. That it was like a life insurance policy. I was so grateful to hear that she exists. And I said the other night in the Galactic Knights show that I like to believe that they were paging her because she was already warming up the ghost to go to Scarif, and they didn't need to even ask her. She was ready to go get it done. So that's my little fantasy. I have no idea if that's true. But anyway, I was elated. So.
Yeah, I always thought you weren't at the briefing with Jim because you'd be like, listen to this woman. She knows what she's talking about. This is a terrible situation.
Let's go.
You should be going and getting
I'm out.
Plans.
She was like, already on her way.
You would grab her in the go. So I think that you were probably irritated because you knew what Jin wanted to do and you knew the council wasn't going to listen to her. Yeah. So you weren't at the briefing and you get called in and Moss is like, okay, calm down.
Yeah.
And Hera's like, here we go again with this. But yeah, the promotion is cool. I mean, right? She should be a general. I mean, she's really good. She has the experience. Those kind of things, I tend to play with the ideas I saw in the movie. Lando becomes a general. I wouldn't expect a big fanfaric thing about it. You know, for me, he talks about the Battle of Tanab, and you kind of go, that must have been cool, and somebody else can tell that story. I love that stuff about Star Wars and the way George wrote it. I love that there's always a feeling of a bigger thing. So, and I'm pretty adamant that, you know, it's not something to me I'd do a whole episode on necessarily. But we will see her. I'll give you this one, Goldman. She'll be a general before the end of the season. Let's put it that way, you know, which I think is cool. I don't know how much more to say about it. Hera's a really fun character, and one of the reasons why originally I was going to have the narration of the trailer be Kanan, because the Jedi always seem to drive the story, but then I realized that was completely wrong, and it should be Hera as the mom, as the matriarch, as this powerful woman who's put this all in play from the beginning. The Rebels are her architecture, it's her framework. And if anyone's going to have the perspective on what they're all going through to the end, it's her. And so she really bookends that trailer because in her own way, she has used the Force to draw them all together, her force of will, her force of commitment, her bravery. So that's I really like that about Hera and Vanessa.
And she's read all our diaries, too. So
yeah, she knows. Chopper spies on them. Oh, Tracy, no, I can't evade more. Thank you, guys.
Thank you
for having us.
Hey, guys, I hope you enjoyed listening to the Rebels press conference with Dave Filoni and the crew. As mentioned at the start of the episode, we are doing a ton of Star Wars Celebration coverage, interviews with the cast and crew, in-panel reactions to John Williams being revealed, The Last Jedi trailer being shown, and so much more. You can check it all out on iTunes or at steelwars.com. And if you're not already, please follow us at Steel Wars on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Plus, we have got a back catalogue of very extensive interviews with Star Wars cast and crew and fans of interest. Thank you guys so much for listening, and hey, may that force be with you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.